Oh, the Living Courageously community. I'm holding back tears, although I need to just let them flow as today's episode is igniting the first ever having a guest on the Living Courageously podcast. Welcome to the Living Courageously podcast. This is a place where women can really connect with themselves through the lens of courage. What does courage mean to you? What does it look like to live a courageous life? What does it mean to turn these dreams and these thoughts and these visions into these lived experiences and these realities? I'm your host, Ashley Strong-Smith. In this lifetime, I've been blessed to continuously live through a place of courage, turning my dreams into realities and truly experiencing a life that is far better than I could have ever imagined. My greatest inspiration is bringing the very tools, rituals, practices, and tangible resources to you alongside the courageous women that you'll meet here. Ultimately, building a community around women choosing courage over fear, creating their dream lives. So this right here is someone I have been honored to call a friend for, oh my gosh, over a decade now. And as if you tuned in to episode 2, I shared 10 of the most courageous acts that I've done in my lifetime. And one of them was being seen so deeply and so fully for who I was in that moment and where I was as I walked in Black Grad. And it was just such a defining and gratifying moment for me. And I mentioned that my dear friend just held my hand throughout the process. And this right here is that dear friend. So this is Dr. Gabrielle. I call her Gabby Jones. welcome, 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 welcome. I'm truly so honored and blessed that you are here. And it just, when I was conceptualizing the Living Courageously podcast and I started really making a list of women in my life who are courageous and just some of the most inspirational women, you were the first person on that list. And so it only is just, it's got to transpire for you to be the first guest on this podcast. So welcome.
Thank you. I'm so overwhelmed with all this gratitude for all of these things that you keep saying about me. I'm like, who is she talking about?
Okay, so community, before we dive in to some of the questions, one of my favorite things to ask is, what are three things that you are grateful for in your life right now?
Personally, I am grateful first and foremost for my faith. God is my guiding light, my purpose, my source, and my husband. He is second on the list, and he knows he's second. But I love him so much. He is my supporter, my guide, my strength, my partner, my teammate, my best friend. And I feel very blessed to have him. And then thirdly is my son, my baby boy, DJ. He's the fourth, named after his father and in honor of his grandfather. And he is just the light of my life. A love that I have been told you can't describe until it happens. And I firmly feel it right now. So those are my three gratitudes.
Your family is so blessed to have you. They're so beautiful. Okay, so tell the community, who are you? Tell us about yourself.
Oh my gosh. where do I start? Well, I am Black. I'm a Black woman. And I was born and raised in the Bay Area. I come from the space of being home when the streetlights come on. Make sure you eat all the food off of your plate. I come from an environment of laughter and joy and also trials and tribulations, and those all being part of who I am. I am goofy. I'm probably one of the corniest people you'll ever meet. My husband always jokes that I am an 80-year-old in a 30-year-old, a 30-something-year-old body, because I'm old. I love to laugh at dad jokes, and I love to be a helper. I think my purpose in this world is to help and be there for others, and that's why I went into the field that I went into. I'm a psychologist. I am an entrepreneur. I am a friend, and I am a child of God. Those are just all aspects of me in a nutshell.
Such a beautiful soul. Something that I want you to expand on is being a Black woman with a doctorate in psychology. Can you talk to me and the audience a little bit just about like the power of that and what that means and how few Black doctor psychologists there are in just the United States?
So I am actually a first generation college student. And when I decided I almost didn't get into, I don't know if you know this story, but I almost didn't get into Long Beach State. And it is only because of my AVID teacher. I don't know if people on this podcast will know AVID, but I don't know if I'm dating myself, if it still exists or not, but advancement via individual determination, which I think is very powerful and really speaks to who I am and in the individual determination piece. In California, they have a blanket, and I think most states for their state universities have blanket application processes. And I am a first gen college student, so I didn't know what it took to apply to college, how to do that. I mean, I didn't know the first thing about it. And AVID was helpful in doing college applications in the fall. And with the California state school system, there is a number that you need to meet in order to get admitted. And the way it was when I was applying for college was you either you meet that number and you're automatically admitted, or you don't meet that number and you're not admitted. That number is based on extracurriculars, your personal statement, all of this stuff, your grades, but it's very like pass fail situation. And I applied to Long Beach State, and another classmate of mine applied, and we had the same number, or my number was a little bit higher than hers or something like that. She was a white woman or a white teenager at that point. And my application got denied and hers got accepted. So she was admitted into Long Beach State and I was not. And it was only because my AVID teacher knew her number and my number that she was like, no, this isn't right. I'm going to call the Long Beach State Admissions Department and let them know they made a mistake. And that is, I'm already getting emotional, because that is why I ended up going to Long Beach State, is because she made that one phone call. And that really laid the foundation for where I am today. It started that, because I had a lot of rejections and I got into some state schools, but it wasn't my passion. And I'm a firm believer of following God's will and stepping in God's purpose. And I knew in my heart, the schools that I got admitted to were not for me. They were not the schools that I needed to be in. But because she made that phone call, they sent me an admission letter. Like within the week, that turnaround was like, oh, we made a mistake. Sorry. And I don't know how many Black people have a story like that, but I'm sure it's a lot. And even more so, they don't have someone in their life who was willing to take that extra step and be like, no, this isn't right. We need to fix it. And I'm so grateful to her. Miss McKee, Carlmont High School, I'll never forget. Any of the Bay Area people, yeah. Oh goodness, she's probably retired now. But ironically, she was also a psychologist. She taught the elective psychology in my school, and so I think that hindsight, she had a lot to do with why I ended up going into psychology. Aside from, you know, wanting to learn about people and how they operate, I am an only child, So I was around a lot of adults growing up, and I've always been very curious about why people do the things that they do. And I also recognize that in psychology, you can do a lot at the bachelor's, master's level, but you can't do everything. And I was determined to be able to do everything. I wanted no limitations on my career whatsoever. And so that is what drove me to get my doctorate. And the higher up I got, the less of people like me I saw. So college, less Black women, which is why I joined a sorority. I went to a predominantly white institution, PWI, and finding community in the Black community was going to culture centers, joining historically Black organizations, and participating in that way. So I joined the National Association of Black Psychologists, and I joined, I was initiated into Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated. So those two organizations really helped ensure that as a Black woman, I didn't feel alone and I wasn't by myself. Because when I went to Oklahoma State, which we can talk about a little later, I was able to connect with my sorority out there because it's an internationally known and recognized organization. And it's same with ABPSI, the Association of Black Psychologists. I was able to connect with folks across the nation and have that support, even if I didn't have it in rural Oklahoma at the time. So in my profession, in my career now as a Black woman, oh my gosh, it's been tough. I have been silenced. I have been told that I'm too direct. I've been told that I should try to tone down and not be so quote unquote angry. So at all the stuff and all of the racism that you can imagine I've experienced in my career, I've been mistaken for less than when it comes to my career. So if I go into a room, they never assume I'm a psychologist. They never assume I have my doctorate. And I'm often met with gasps and surprise that I have such a high level of education. And it is a part of what we're dealing with, unfortunately, in the United States and in the world.
Wow. I didn't realize that is the reality in which you experience, especially being so incredibly educated and just truly one of the most down-to-earth, loving, passionate, and just compassionate souls that I know. And that is, I'm like really glad that you shared it. And also something that's fun for the guests to hear and know is all of the guests that I interview on here get to title their own episode. And so Gabrielle titled hers, Know Your Voice, Honor Your Instinct, which is where that was birthed from. And I just really appreciate you shedding light on it. And I know you'll dive in a little bit deeper. As we move into it a bit more, let's lay the foundation of what your definition of courage is. Like, what does it mean to you?
That's a great question. And I love it so much because that is how I live my life. I believe that courage is having faith and trusting in what you don't see, trusting the unknown, and taking the step anyway. Courage really looks like, in my life, stepping into things that I'm not totally sure of, but am confident and have faith that God will guide me through. And I think that when I thought about this question and when I was kind of mulling over, how do I want to describe it? I wanted to highlight that it doesn't mean you're not afraid. It definitely means being afraid. It means being terrified almost, but doing it anyway. That's the courageous piece, is like doing it anyway, pushing beyond that discomfort and being willing to sit in it and just power through with whatever resources and supports you need, but doing it.
I mean, so beautifully said. And I love that it's like being afraid and still moving through it. Like one of my deepest mantras for life and embedded through this podcast is choosing the courage over the fear as you move through. Mm-hmm. And it is the hardest thing you have to do. And it is a conscious decision on a regular basis when you're moving through a courageous moment. But choosing that, it's like, I'll never forget my doula when I was giving birth to my daughter. It was like, the only way out is through. The only way out is through. And that is this, to me, I relate that so much with this idea and concept around courage is the only way out is through. One of my favorite questions now then. So where in life have you been most courageous?
When I tell you, God has pushed me in ways throughout my entire life that I can't even... I mean, I can point out various places in my life where I've been courageous, but I'll just focus on the ones that are most salient to me today right now. And the first one is moving to Oklahoma from California. Anybody who's listening to this podcast who lives in Oklahoma, I feel for you. Anybody who's curious about going to Oklahoma, don't. It is a tough place to live, and also one of the most memorable times in my life and best experience. I met my husband there, my best friends there. I mean, there's such a love-hate with Oklahoma. I would say that one. I had no money. I had no friends. I had no family. I got into Oklahoma State's doctorate program, and I was like, okay, this is what I'm doing, God. This is it. Oklahoma, never been there, know nothing about it. I guess this is what we're doing. Going to Oklahoma for my doctorate, probably the biggest and most courageous thing I could have done. I had never lived out of state prior to moving to Oklahoma. And I knew that it was a red state, that it was very conservative, and there was a lot of racism there. I learned a lot about it being the Bible Belt. I was there when they repealed affirmative action in 2012 on the same ballot that they allowed drinking in restaurants on Sundays. So, yeah, I mean, it's a curious place, but I have such fond memories there. We plan to go back every year to our homecoming in Oklahoma, go Pokes, because it holds a very special place in mine and my husband's heart. I met my husband there, and I mean, Oklahoma, really? He's from Dallas. I'm from California. We met in Oklahoma. What a story. So that was very courageous for me. I also decided to apply for internships. For those of you who are not familiar with the psychology process, there's something called MATCH, and it's every year, and it's part of the requirements doing an internship for licensure as a psychologist. And there are levels to it. So you have to, or it's encouraged that you apply to an APA accredited and or APIC accredited site. So your site has to have accreditation. Thousands and thousands of people apply every year, and it's recommended that you apply to 15 or more sites so that you get at least 5 or 6 interviews in hopes that you match with one of those sites. And what makes it even more convoluted is you have to rank the sites 1 through 5, and those sites rank you, and you have to match with those sites in order to, and this is a nationwide thing. Not all sites are accredited. And if you don't match the first go around, then they have a clearinghouse where you can try again. And if you don't match that round, then you have to wait a whole year. What do you do for that year? So needless to say, there's a lot of pressure and a lot of anxiety around applying to internship. And I think my next biggest courageous step was to silence out the noise and do what I knew God intended for me to do. So I knew I needed to come back to California. My family is in California, and I was pretty responsible. My grandparents were aging and wanted to be close to them. So I decided to primarily apply two internships, only accredited internships in the state of California, only APA accredited, which is even more, I mean, the stringency gets more and more narrow. I only applied on the West Coast, primarily in California. And I also only applied to community mental health agencies, completed my doctorate in a counseling psychology program. And traditionally, if you do counseling psychology, then you would go to a counseling center. That's where you would apply for your internship year. And I didn't want to work in counseling center. I wanted to work in community mental health. And so I applied to hospitals and community mental health agencies only. Further, I only applied to 12 because the criteria that I had for myself and for the internship sites that I wanted to apply to, there were only 12 that I saw fit. I didn't want to apply to any that I didn't feel like I would be satisfied with. This all costs money too, just to lay the front. This is not free. This is money out of my pocket to do all of this stuff. So as a first generation college student, graduate, first generation getting my advanced degree, you know, single individual without financial resources at my ready, I had a lot of loans to take out to do this process. So there are gates that are kept for, unfortunately, people of color getting into psychology. And my leadership in APA and other areas of my profession, one of the things that I intend to do and try to do is kind of break those barriers to entry when it comes to my field and my profession. But anyway, back to the courageous act. So I only applied to 12. You're supposed to apply to at least 15. I only applied on the West Coast. They encourage you to apply across the nation. And during this whole time, I really felt a sense of peace. I think this is the first time that I felt the peace that it talks about in the Bible, a peace that surpasses all understanding, because I was so calm and comfortable and at peace with my decisions. And everyone else was so anxious about match day. And, you know, they have match parties and all of this stuff. And for my particular school, I believe only one person had matched in California prior to me in the last 10 years. So it was really unlikely that I would match if I was targeting California, because mostly people in California match in California. And it's kind of regional in that sense. But I did it anyway. And I was okay with that. I had made peace with the fact that if I wasn't going to match, then it wasn't intended for me to match that year. And that's fine. I was so comfortable staying in Oklahoma for another year. That's what that meant. And having to do this whole process again, financially, emotionally, that's what all of that meant. I matched in Pasadena. It was my second pick. They liked me. I liked them. And so we started going together. So that was another courageous act. And the third one that I'll highlight, and I'll go, you know, really kind of quickly with this, but having a baby, that was a courageous act for me, because I had two miscarriages prior. One was at 6.5 weeks and one was actually at 5 months. I went into my 5-month appointment and they told me that my baby's heart stopped beating. I know that there are women listening to this who have experienced that. Talk about it. We have to talk about it. We have to be very, very communicative and support each other and recognize that it is more common than people lead on to believe. And it is still very hard and it's still very traumatizing. So shout out to all the moms out there, adopted moms, bonus moms, stepmoms, choice moms, friend moms, all the moms, everyone out there who is providing and being, you know, a beacon of light to these kiddos and these babies, because it is not an easy task. But I felt like that was courageous. One, because of my history, I was already high risk as a result of my miscarriages in the late stage of my second one, but also because being a Black woman, I don't know if people know this, but giving birth as a Black woman is life-threatening. Giving birth as a woman, period, is life-threatening, but Black women are at a much more disproportionate rate of losing their life during delivery than white women are. I was risking quite literally my life to have a child. And I think it was courageous because there's not a lot that is openly discussed in this area. I don't regret it. It was a very difficult time in my life. It was a difficult pregnancy, but my baby was fine the whole time. And he is one of the best things that have ever happened to me. I love him so, so much. He's so sweet. He's so happy. And he brings so much joy to people who meet him. And he's just a baby. I don't know how that happens, but he is just such a joy. He just makes people's hearts happy. And he is, my mother-in-law says this all the time, that he is just going to be a blessing in this world. And I firmly believe that. And I truly believe that God blessed me with him. Those are my courageous acts. I don't know if you hear him screaming in the background. He's back there finding his little voice.
Oh my gosh. I'm in tears over here. I already had I'm still getting over my sinus infection and now I'm crying on top of it. So I'm a big old mush. I just really want to acknowledge you for just one, being so raw and open and vulnerable and sharing your process, but two, just like, I mean, I loved what you said, like having a peace that surpasses all understanding. And I think that is like your mantra behind everything that you shared without even maybe being conscious of it. But I just, and thank you for sharing your like story and experience around having DJ in your miscarriages, because I think this is a conversation that more women need to have, because I know so many women who have had miscarriages and it feels so alone. And I just really honor you. There is something that I personally know about you that I think is incredibly courageous, and I would love if you would share a bit with the audience, is you are an entrepreneur. Like, now, this is like, yes, you are an entrepreneur. So please share a little bit more about what your company is, why you, after having a newborn, quit your job to start your as if that wasn't enough work in itself, you quit your job to start your own company with a newborn. That is just so incredibly courageous. And I have such admiration for one, women, two, courageous women, and three, there's a soft spot in my heart for like courageous, badass female entrepreneurs who are mothers on top of that, doing all the things, because it is not an easy task. And so can you just please share a little bit more about what made you decide to start your business, what your business is, and then even to please go in with like how you're currently supporting people, how people can work with you. Give us the whole scoop.
Absolutely. Yeah, I forgot that little. Well, I will say that this has been years in the making, and I cannot say enough how much God has ordered my steps and how timing is everything. Because 2 years ago, or two years ago now, my therapist and David, my husband, actually told me, because I was complaining about work. And they were like, you have so much to offer. You can do so much more in your career than what you're doing. And if you're unhappy, just step out and you'll be fine. And I did not believe that. And this is my therapist. I mean, whose therapist tells them to do their own thing, right? Like, what do you mean, girl? I don't know about that. But shout out to my therapist. Love her. But she was really encouraging. And my husband, David, was like, do you realize how much you can do on your own and how much more you can offer the world on your own? And I said, anxious. It makes me nervous. No, I don't know. So about 2 years ago is when that conversation actually started. And I was not ready to hear it. I was not ready to embrace it, step into it, receive it. And it wasn't It was fear, I will say that. But it was also just this false sense of security in work, I think. What we often do is, as a society, having a job means financial security. And that's not necessarily the case. And so I learned that through my experience with my husband. He ended up getting laid off in 2018, very unexpectedly from a large company. And that was our main source of income. We were both working, but he was making a lot more than I was. And so that was one of the first instances where I realized that having a job wasn't necessarily security. But I just wasn't ready to hear that message. And COVID hit and everything turned upside down. And then the racial pandemic happened and the drug epidemic was happening. And all of these things started swirling around. And I was really, really unhappy at my job. I felt unsupported. Like I had mentioned earlier, I had received a lot of feedback that was microaggressive. When George Floyd was murdered, at that time I was walking to work. So we were in the middle of the beginning of the pandemic. There was a trail that I walked to work, and on the trail, I saw something that said Black Lives Matter, and it was crossed out and it said All Lives Matter. And so that's a whole discussion in and of itself that I'm not going to go into, but it was terrifying to me. Because that let me know that there are people who don't see me and they walk on this trail that I walk on. And then there was a shooting near my house because it was during a lot of the protests and a Black woman was shot with a stray bullet. And so I talked to my boss and I told him that I was really concerned about my safety because they were saying that leadership needs to come into the office. And I said, I'm concerned about my safety at this point, and I really don't want to come into the office. If I could work remotely, that would be great. And he said to me, you don't think that would happen to you though, right? And I said, well, actually I do. And the fact that you even felt like you could say that is really telling to me. And he didn't get it. I don't think he gets it to this point, to this day, but just that was kind of the, okay, it might be time for me to go. And then I got my evaluation and the feedback that I received was that I was too direct. And I asked, what does that mean? And do you have examples? Is there, because I'm definitely, I really appreciate feedback very much. And I'm constantly on this journey to improve myself as a person and as a professional. And I know that as a Black woman, I have to work 10 times harder to be recognized, appreciated, and respected in the higher up that I go. And he didn't have any examples for me. He just said, this is what I got. You're just too direct. And I said, well, one of our tenets at the company I was working for at the time, one of the tenets was to be clear and concise with our feedback. And as a supervisor, it's my job. We're working with people's lives. These are high risk. I worked in a partial hospitalization. These are people who have either attempted to take their lives or die or have experienced extreme trauma or are contemplating dying by suicide. I mean, there are so many things that need to be addressed pretty directly in crisis situations. And I just was really confused and caught off guard by that feedback. I was also asked to do a lot of work that was not within my job description and not get paid any more for it. So anytime I would try to speak up for myself and advocate for myself, I was seen as a problem. And so it was late last year, I was pregnant and I did not feel like if I kept working at the company I was at, that I would be able to maintain my pregnancy. And it was that realization that drove me to start really considering starting my own business. And like I said, God's timing is impeccable because I think I needed to realize that I needed to be present for my son, for my child, for my family. And I needed to live a life that was consistent with my values. And my values started with my faith and my family. And the work I was doing was burning me out. It wasn't fulfilling. I did not feel like I was being helpful. I did not feel like I was appreciated. And so because of that, I decided to start Steady. And Steady is, I got the name because I asked friends, and I think I had texted you as one of my close, you know, trusted friends, if you could describe me in one word, what would it be? And I don't know if you remember this text message. Okay. But I sent it to a few people and I got a series of words back. And one of the words that stood out to me was that I'm steady to them. And there were a bunch of other words that also were synonyms for steady. And I talked with my husband and I was like, what do you think? And he was like, I really like that name. It fits you. And it communicates exactly what you want people to feel when they interact and work with you. Consistent, dependable, reliable, just unwavering. And so that's kind of where the name came from. And if you look at the logo on the website, it's a hummingbird. And that represents the steadiness of when a hummingbird is trying to eat, their wings are flapping 1,000 times a minute, but they're not moving. I mean, you wouldn't know how hard they're working to get their food. And they're just beautiful, majestic creatures. And a little tidbit of the logo, the T is representative of a cross and the hummingbird is eating from the top of the T on Steady, because that's where my source is. My source is from my faith. And so me as the hummingbird, T as my cross, and my organization as a whole, that's kind of how it came to be. It came to fruition. What I do in that, oh.
You guys, if you could see us on video right now, I've got tears streaming down my face and I'm trying to be as quiet as possible as I'm crying over here as she describes this. I just, yeah, knowing Gabby the way that I do and just the intentionality, and like a dear friend of mine, Juliet, who created her logo and like website, just knowing how much intentionality went into the name, went into the logo, went into the brand colors, went into the mission, like the vision. It makes me a big old sap over here. Sorry, keep going.
No, don't be sorry. That's why I did. I appreciate that. I really do, because it is near and dear to my heart. But I provide clinical consultation, training and development services and coaching. So I provide trainings to organizations that offer mental health and substance use services. And I do leadership coaching and executive coaching in the belonging, justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion space. And I do program development and program evaluation for substance use. And generally speaking, it's culturally responsive substance use care. A lot of people will just copy paste DEI onto substance use treatment. And there are just so many more aspects of substance use care that require more intentionality and more cultural awareness specific to substance use treatment. So Steady is really committed to changing the trajectory of substance use treatment and creating a framework that is truly more equitable across systems at every level. And through that, working with executive leadership so that they can implement it within their organizations and agencies nationwide. And I also do a little bit of counseling therapy on the side. But primarily my work is with organizations and equity type work to help improve workplaces, workspaces, to incorporate more mental health and wellness from a culturally responsive lens, and to improve substance use care across the care spectrum in a culturally responsive way.
Oh, this world is so blessed to have you. I'm like, oh, I'm in awe of what you're committed to and what the foundation of your business is. And like, not just what your passions and values are, but how you've been able to interweave those to like, not only make people's lives better, but like to make the systems better and more supportive. And just, you literally are creating change, not just within your community, but literally in this world. And I am in awe of who you are and of the courage that you radiate every single day, and how you are taking just the various pieces of the courageous, like self and nature that you are to change people's livelihoods. And I admire you and what you're doing so deeply. Wow. Okay, a few things. How can people follow along? How can they get exposed to your content? And then if people want to work with you, how do they contact you?
Yeah. So I am on LinkedIn and Twitter. LinkedIn, Steady Clinical Consultation Training and Development. Also, I have a personal LinkedIn, Dr. Gabrielle Jones. And my Twitter handle is steady_LLC. If people want to follow, I'm launching a blog series in November. So I'm really excited about that. And there's just a lot coming. There's a lot coming from Steady in the next year. So be sure to keep on the lookout. My website, www.steadyllc.com, is another way to get to know a little bit more about our services and what is offered. And people can also just email me. It's on the website, but also drgabrielle@steadyllc.com.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Before we conclude this, if there was one thing that you can just share with this community, what would be like a tidbit that just moves you throughout your life that you want them to know or want to share with?
I would want them to know that just because one door closes doesn't mean that an opportunity isn't available elsewhere.
Nothing else to be said. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much all for tuning in to this incredible episode of the Living Courageously podcast. This is the first of what will hopefully be many stories and insight into these incredibly courageous women, how they have maneuvered through their life, what they're doing, and what courage in action really looks like and means for them. So just so you kind of know a bit about how they'll be released is every other week will be an interview, and then the weeks in between will be lessons and just tidbits from my courageous life. So thank you for tuning in. And Dr. Gabrielle Jones, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.